From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
He's pulling away by three. Jorge Chavez and Monarcos have won the Kentucky Derby. And the final time was 1:59.45. He was as fast as Secretariat.
Arrowgate, full out. Can he stick with it? California Chrome. Arrowgate still coming. California Chrome.
Welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by Red Brand Fence.
It's Allie Darn, Affirmed, battling back along the inside. We'll test these two to the wire. Affirmed under a left-hand whip. Allie Darn on the outside driving. Affirmed and Allie Darn heads apart. Affirmed's got a nose in front as they come onto the wire.
The Derby winner, Brand That Bird, closing a late gap, but it is Rachel Alexandra. She's simply above and beyond them. A filly has won the Preakness.
Now, here's Mike Penna.
Good morning once again, everyone, and welcome to the show that launched this network. It is the Equine Forum, presented by Red Brand Fence on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, my producer Lee Delapina, coming to you from our studios in the heart of the Bluegrass, Lexington, Kentucky, and want to welcome each of you tuning in throughout North America on this Saturday morning. You're listening on Sirius 219, XM 201. You're listening on our affiliates in Lexington, Louisville, and across the country. And of course, many of you listening digitally, you're doing that on our website at horseracingradio.net. The Run for the Roses is now just 49 days, 10 hours, 48 minutes, and 14 seconds away. That's, of course, if the Kentucky Derby remains on the calendar as scheduled, Saturday, May 2nd. The dominant story again this past week, coronavirus, COVID-19, and the unprecedented impact that it's having on the sporting world, on industries, on schools, and quite frankly, on all of our lives. And in sports, the NBA, the first domino to fall, if you will, announcing drastic measures this past week and the suspension of its season. The NCAA quickly followed, announcing the cancellations of conference tournaments, men's and women's March Madness, and all spring sports. Then the NHL, Major League Baseball, and PGA Tour announced their decisions. The Masters, which was scheduled to be held in early April, which, by the way, is its own entity separate from the PGA Tour and the most iconic tournament in the sport of golf, also announced this past week that it would be postponed. Horse racing, certainly not immune to these types of things. And on Thursday, we saw most tracks announce that they would continue to run races, but do it without spectators. And that's where we currently stand right now as of 8:03 Eastern Time on this Saturday morning. And I'm a little surprised that racing hasn't followed suit with other sports and postponed or suspended racing for the next few weeks. Remember, many of those other sports initially announced that they would contest the sporting events with no spectators before they ultimately made the decision to make the next step and suspend or cancel those games and events altogether. And I think the sport of horse racing compares favorably to golf on this issue, because both golf and horse racing are conducted in an outside open-air venue. And one of the impactful statements leading to full golf tournaments being canceled, in particular the Players Championship, which was scheduled to be contested this weekend. They played the first round on Thursday and then canceled after that. One of the impactful statements in golf came from the number one golfer in the world, Rory McIlroy, who said, more than anything, everyone needs to get tested, meaning all the players, all the caddies, everybody that would be involved, even if there were no spectators allowed. And even though racetracks are running races without spectators, you still have plenty of people who will be there to put on the show. You have jockeys, you have trainers, you have owners, racing officials, starting gate crew members, outriders, members of the media that will be allowed there to cover the event. and all individuals circulating in close proximity. And I'm just wondering, are we at the same point now as the PGA when they were deciding whether or not to continue with the Players' Championship this weekend? And do Rory's comments apply to horse racing as well? More than anything, everyone needs to get tested. If the show's going to go on, is that the next step? Does everyone, every jockey, every owner, every trainer, every racing official, anybody that is there, do we need to say that? Do we need to say that everyone needs to get tested? And does not suspending racing open our sport up to more criticism should there be a couple of workers, a couple of jockeys, starting great crew members, whatever it might be, that end up testing positive eventually for the virus? Well, it probably does. Probably does. But is that step necessary in the sport of thoroughbred racing? I actually sent out a poll question this past week at HRN on Twitter and asked people if racing should suspend all operations for the next few weeks, or if running without fans is sufficient enough. And the overwhelming responses that the recurring theme to those responses that we received was that eventually racing will probably have to follow in the footsteps of other sports and say we can't take the chance. I'm going to be joined by Keeneland President and CEO Bill Thomason, 9:40 Eastern Time this morning. Keeneland announcing that they would run a portion, the first half of their spring meet essentially, without fans. And I'm wondering if the option to cancel altogether is on the table. I'll talk to Bill about that coming up at 9:40 Eastern Time. And what impact could COVID-19 potentially have on the Kentucky Derby this year? I mentioned at the top of the show that we're still 49 days away, but in terms of planning and adjustments and things that need to be done, you have to think, even though Churchill came out this week and said that they're going to continue to monitor the situation and they'll make a call when they get a little closer, you have to think that they can't wait too much longer before they have to make a call on what they're going to do with the Derby. Are they going to run the Kentucky Derby? Are they going to run it without fans? Without the 120,000, 130,000 fans? Same thing with the Kentucky Oaks on Friday? Or are they going to push it back and run it later? Can they do that? Where would it fit? A lot of questions. I mean, this is still such a fluid, evolving issue. We have heard this throughout the week on many news channels, many sports channels. It is a fluid situation, and Churchill would be the first to tell you that. But they're going to keep an eye on it, and we'll see where this goes. But again, if you're looking at a parallel to the PGA Tour and what happened with the Masters, which, okay, let's use the Masters as a parallel to the Kentucky Derby, the PGA canceling all tournaments leading up to the Masters, then the Masters postponing. Well, those tournaments, golfers use those like prep races. Preps for the Masters. And we have several prep races. We have a couple taking place today. Several prep races for the Kentucky Derby over the next couple of months. What do you do with those? And if you don't run races, when do those get rescheduled? You can't ask horses to go a mile and a quarter at Churchill Downs without any prep races. And then how would you determine the field? We talk about the point system, right? How do you determine the field if that scenario takes place and we don't run the other prep races? A lot of questions. And this can go a lot of different ways. No shortage of things to talk about on the program this morning and, of course, moving forward as this situation continues to develop. Just throwing these things out there, food for thought. The other big news in the sport of horse racing this week occurred Monday, when federal prosecutors announced the doping scheme involving trainers Jason Service and Jorge Navarro. Simply put, more than two dozen horse trainers, and that number even now continues to grow, veterinarians and others were charged in what was described as a widespread international scheme to drug horses to race faster. That's how it was described. That news is disturbing on so many levels. And in addition to being another major black eye for our sport, it once again leads to a variety of questions. Is the sport of horse racing capable of policing and regulating itself? Certainly doesn't look like it. And have we finally come to the point where federal intervention is the only way to ensure the long-term success and well-being of our sport? As many of you know who listen regularly, I have always been against that. But now, seeing what's gone on, seeing this new indictment and the news coming out with two high-profile trainers, you have to wonder. You have to wonder. It took the FBI and wiretaps to bring this to light and to bust these individuals. So you have to wonder, is our sport capable of doing this on our own? Doesn't look like it. And once again, racing is presented with an opportunity to make a statement and show it can do this now, moving forward. I'm going to talk with trainer Mark Cassie coming up 9:20 Eastern time. Mark will share his thoughts on this whole issue. And you know, if you're an owner or a trainer who plays by the rules, like Mark Cassie, for example, like Graham Motion, look, that's the vast majority. That's 99% of the people who play this game that play by the rules. How do you feel knowing that you busted your tail, you did everything right, and you got beat by individuals who were cheating? And if you had an idea that something fishy was going on, because let's face it, this is not always an industry where, you know, secrets are the best kept secrets in the world. But if you had an idea that something fishy was going on, did you avoid the meets and the races that those cheaters were competing in? Jeff Bloom wants Maximum Security disqualified from the Saudi Cup. And I don't blame him. Midnight Bisou ran a gangbusters race to be second behind Maximum Security. And now, knowing what we know about Maximum Security and his trainer Jason Service, I don't blame Jeff Bloom. I think you have to. And if you're a prospective owner thinking about getting involved in racing, here's another level to this whole thing. Does it discourage you from getting involved now? Do you say, well, this sport's crooked, forget it? Or does it embolden you and say, all right, good, we're catching the cheaters, the people that aren't playing by the rules, and I want to hitch my wagon to people that are, to good people in this sport? Does it embolden you? Does it discourage you? How about breeders? Do you still want to breed to a stallion trained by Jason Service or Jorge Navarro or anyone else named in this indictment? Think about that, too. If you're a buyer, do you want to buy a horse who is by one of those stallions? A lot of levels to this. Mark Cassie, 9:20 Eastern. He'll talk about that. You have the two Derby points races today. We'll get into those. The Rebel down at Oaklawn, the Jeff Ruby Stakes up at Turfway Park. Our Stallion Spotlight segment coming up. 8:15 Eastern, well, a few minutes after that now. Country Life Farm is in the spotlight today. They're in Fallston, Maryland. Josh Pons, his brother Mike, they are the owners. Josh is going to join me 8:15 to talk about their stallion roster. Steve Asmussen is going to be with me, too. He's going to be with me at 8:35. I'll talk to the Hall of Fame trainer about his three horses he has entered in today's Rebel Stakes. He has Basin, second choice at 3-1, Silver Prospector, and Accession, all three going to the post for Steve, so I'll talk to him at 8:35. Kip Elzer from Kirkwood going to be with me to tell you what's happening with the two-year-old sales. He's down at OBS right now. They announced that the show will go on as usual this week, whereas Fasig Tipton came out and said, we're going to cancel our Gulfstream sale, which was set to be held in early April. They're going to cancel that sale, but those horses will be shifted to the Mid-Atlantic two-year-old in training sale, which is scheduled for May 18th and May 19th. So keep that in mind, but I'll ask Kip about that. Remember, Kip gallops his horses. He doesn't work them. He gallops his horses at that phase of Tipton Gulfstream sale. Will he still do that at the Mid-Atlantic sale with his horses that he'll be selling? So I'll talk to Kip about that, 9 o'clock Eastern. Again, Martin Cassie, 9:20 Eastern. Bill Thomason, Keeneland president, coming up at 9:40 Eastern time. It's a really busy show. Poll question, is the sport of horse racing capable of policing and regulating itself? Quite simply, is the sport of horse racing capable of policing and regulating itself? Yes or no? You got two choices. Comments, absolutely welcome. I'll try to pass those along as we move throughout the show. You can go to @HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook to let me know. I'm back with Josh Pons in our Stallion Spotlight segment presented by Red Brand Fence. That's next on the Equine Forum on HRRN, all presented by Red Brand, manufacturing the V-Mesh and non-climb fence you see on horse farms worldwide.
Hello, I'm Eric Hamelback, CEO of the National HBPA. Thoroughbred owners and trainers know the importance of keeping their horse on schedule, on the track, and injury-free. Even a small injury can result in losing precious time and serious money. That's why farms worldwide trust Keep Safe V-Mesh Fence from Red Brand. The strong mesh design flexes on impact and reduces injuries, keeping your athletes on schedule and on the track. Learn more about Keep Safe V-Mesh Horse Fence at redbrand.com.
Multiple grade one winning millionaire, World of Trouble.
World of Trouble and Manny Franco win the Jiper.
World of Trouble takes the Carter.
One of the fastest horses of his generation, the son of Cantharos captured both the grade one Carter on dirt and grade one Jiper on turf this year and would go on to record 100 plus buyer speed figures in his last seven starts, including a 118 buyer as a three-year-old, the highest three-year-old buyer speed figure of 2018. World of Trouble, standing at Hillendale.
Unanimous champion two-year-old and three-time grade one winner Classic Empire got off to a fantastic start with his first weanlings at the November sales. Averaging over $100,000 from 27 sold, up to eight times his initial $35,000 stud fee. Right on the same cross as champion freshman sire American Pharoah, Classic Empire's outstanding race record is backed up with a stallion's pedigree. Being from the family of Harlan's Holiday, Ride the Rails, and Bold Nijin. Standing for just $20,000, Classic Empire looks like a serious value for 2020.
The Florida thoroughbred industry is celebrating 75 years with the Florida Thoroughbred Breeders and Owners Association. And what a successful 75 it has been. Florida breds have won 19 Triple Crown races, 52 national championships, and along the way, making 170 racehorse millionaires, plus 66 Eclipse Awards, with two Florida breds, Imperial Hint and World of Trouble, receiving Eclipse Award nominations in 2020. The FTBOA, celebrating 75 years. Join Florida for the next 25.
When it's time to paint the fences and barns, think Farm Paint. At Farm Paint, you get the industry's best coatings and paints factory direct at low, low prices. Farm Paint is your source for quality paints, roof coatings, dustless arena footings, and more. You can purchase online or drop into a Farm Paint store near you with locations in Heart of Bluegrass Country at 700 Phillips Lane in Lexington, Kentucky, Columbus, Ohio, and Sandusky, Ohio. Buy factory direct and save at farmpaint.com. That's farmpaint.com.
Eddie Woods is a perennial leading consigner, having sold multiple graded stakes winners, including 26 grade one winners and four champions. Recent stars include undefeated three-year-old stakes winner Cafe Pharoah in Japan.
There's going to be Cafe Pharoah starting to stretch out. We'll be two for two.
And the talented Todd Fletcher-trained Kentucky Derby prospect, Gouverneur Morris.
Gouverneur Morris on the outside. He strikes to the lead.
A passion for hard work that produces big-time results. Find your next winner at the Eddie Woods consignment. Visit eddiewoods.com.
This is Steve Asmussen. You're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
This is the Stallion Spotlight, presented by Red Brand Fence.
Frisian Fire sweeps the three-year-old series at the fairgrounds. Frisian Fire in 143-2.
Mosler found a seam through and has taken the lead in deep stretch. And it is Mosler on to victory in the Elusive Quality Stakes.
Divining Rod is moving on for the finish. Divining Rod and Julian Leperoux, convincing winner of the Coolmore Lexington Stakes.
But this was a runaway. Super 99 trounces them. Wow.
Yeah, just a little taste of what you can expect when you go to countrylifefarm.com and you start reading about all of the stallions standing there. Divining Rod, Frisian Fire, Mosler, Super 99, their babies, some already on the racetrack and doing their thing, others just kind of getting started with their careers, like Mosler, and looking forward to them as we move throughout 2020 here. And joining me now for our Stallion Spotlight segment presented by Red Brand Fence is Josh Pons, co-owner of Country Life Farm and Maryland. And Josh, it's nice to talk with you here this morning. Usually your brother Mike is the one that comes on with me. And, you know, I say good morning, Mike, and 15 minutes later, he's done. So, Josh, nice to have you with me.
Nice to be with you, Mike. How are you?
Things are great. How's everything in Maryland?
Well, considering, you know, everything, it's moving along. You know, the horses, they don't know what day it is. They don't know anything else other than let's eat and go outside and come back in. So it's still busy on the farms, and you wouldn't know that there was any external issues, but you know, it's certainly on everybody's minds.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Have you had to make any adjustments at all with the way that Country Life is doing business in light of what we're seeing with COVID-19?
Well, the biggest thing is that, you know, we do a lot of racing and breeding partnerships, and at the track, although we're delighted that they're still putting on the show, none of our, you know, only licensed partners can get access to the track. So
yep.
Sometimes that leaves the families of partners on the sidelines. And you know, it's life as it is these days, and it'll all work out.
Yeah, it'll all work out. It'll all come to pass eventually, no doubt about it. Well, let's talk about the Stallions at Country Life, and I guess we'll start with the veteran, Frisian Fire, who continues to, as you guys like to say, get his lunch pail runners. They just show up, and they continue to do it all the time. I don't know how you do it, Josh.
Well, he's just a solid, you know, 300 hitter, and puts good babies out, and he's been, you know, close to having a breakout horse. I mean, Army Mule was 3-for-3 and brilliant, but didn't stay sound. And, you know, we're hoping that, you know, one of them will just, you know, make this horse into what he really deserves to be. I mean, he could have a classic winner with his pedigree and with the ability that he has in some of his babies. But for the time being, he's the second leading sire around here after Great Notion, and he's a solid horse. He's a good horse to breed to.
When you have a horse like Frisian Fire, and he's had continued success, consistent success year in and year out, do you start to get a sense of which types of mares kind of fit well with him, or do you just continue to throw things at him and see what sticks?
In the regions, you're not always able to, you know, select your best mare for your best stallion. Sometimes you just have to make it up as you go. But that hybrid vigor that's out here in the region sometimes is the best thing for a stallion. I think when we started Malibu Moon at Stud, lots of mares that were bred to him were D Nicks and C Nicks, and you know, a really good stallion rewrites his own Nicks, and since they're retrospective instead of looking forward, a lot of times people won't breed to a stallion because they think it's a bad nick, and there's more to it than that. So any kind of mare really suits Frisian Fire. He's you know, 16 hands, and he's balanced, and he was very fast, and you know, he's beautifully bred. He's out of a De Hare mare, and that's deputy minister, and so he's got beautiful influences in his pedigree, and he you know, he can move a mare up. A lot of these local mares were good allowance winners, 80,000, 100,000, and they, you know, they can produce runners. They're not commercially fantastic at the sales, and of course the regional sales are, you know, difficult as they are, getting more difficult with more and more stallions from Kentucky being represented out in the region. So there's no easy way to the winner's circle.
You have Divining Rod there, too, and people will remember him, a great stakes winner. He earned nearly $900,000, put up some really big buyer numbers. He was a tremendous racehorse. Tell me more about Divining Rod.
Well, he's a flashy, Constitution-looking son of Tappet. He's a very exciting horse, and he was just a silly head bob in the Cigar Mile from being a Grade One winner. And he kind of played around with Connected about the 16th pole, and looked over at him, and looked like he could have just stretched his neck out and been a Grade One winner. But of course, if he did that, his earnings would have been over $1 million, and he'd been a Grade One winner by Tappet, and he wouldn't have been a horse that might have fit in the regions. So, we're looking for ways to make stallions work, and sometimes you have to take a little bit off of the race record in order to have that high test pedigree. But he doesn't lack for anything. It's silly saying that they check all the boxes. Well, he's perfectly correct. His mother's a three-quarter sister to Kitten's Joy. She won 3 Grade One races and $2 million. His sister, his full sister, Jo's a cat, has been winning stakes for Arnaud Delacour all winter long. And he has beautiful yearlings, and we've stockpiled a whole bunch of them and hoping to prove him in the stud, in a year from now.
Well, when you talk about stallions that seem to check all the boxes, which, by the way, visiting with Josh Pons of Country Life Farm in Maryland, you talk about stallions that check all the boxes. Mosler is certainly one of them, and he's done it ever since he was a yearling, a million-dollar yearling by Warfront, multiple stakes winner. This is a horse that had it all, looks and has it all, looks, pedigree, and he could really run. Tell me more about Mosler.
Yeah, well, you've seen him. It's a big, strong horse. He's an un-Warfront, in that his mother's by Arch and the second name's by Seeking the Gold. And it gives him a little stretch to his pedigree, to his confirmation. It was a million-dollar yearling, and Mrs. Adele Dilschneider owns a piece of him, and Seth Hancock owns a piece of him, and Country Life owns a piece of him. And we're very excited. He's got 75 two-year-olds this spring, and some of them are working pretty well right now, and we've sent a whole bunch of them to the Middleburg Training Center to get them Virginia certified so that they'll be Maryland bred, Virginia certified. We've got a few in Delaware at Herb Mullis's farm, trying to make sure that every state program around us that we can avail ourselves of, that these babies are eligible for. We think it'll really help his earnings. And to compete against stallions in Kentucky that have 110 and 120 foals in their first crop, and how important the earnings are to the leading sire list, you have to do everything within your ability to make a stallion these days, and that's what we're doing with Mosler. We love his foals, and we love the fact that he ran his first 6 races on dirt, and he won 3 of them.
Yeah.
He won at 2 at Belmont Park in September, so we don't think these babies are going to be, 4-year-old cup horses. We're hoping that they're, that by the time August and September roll around, that, he's a talking horse.
Well, your other stallion is a son of Pulpit. He's Maryland's only greatest stakes winning son of Pulpit. That's Super 99. He's starting to get more runners, but Josh, is it safe to say that he's kind of been your problem child? Would that be a good way to put
yes.
it?
Yes, I know. This is a family program, but he was breeding his third mare of his career, and she just stepped forward and got out of her leg strap and threw off a restraint, and she kicked him right in the testicles in his third cover. It wasn't his fault. It was just something that sometimes happens in breeding sheds. Dying gets kicked. But it
never good.
It caused inflammation that knocked out 90 days of his first breeding season, and he's been playing catch-up ever since. Haven't said that. He's a hell of a catch-up player. and yesterday, for instance, at Laurel, with access restricted only to licensed owners and trainers and grooms, the thrill of watching one of his horses that was bred by a good client, Charlie Parker, in Kentucky. He's a Maryland bred named Let's Play Nine, and he's 3-for-4, and he won yesterday by a skinny nose on a great ride by Trevor McCarthy. And, you know, there wasn't anybody there to cheer him on except me and Tana, Mike Trombetta's assistant. But, you know, it just validates what a nice horse Super 99 can get for you.
Yeah, he's a really good a stallion that people should really not give up on, because he has had his problems, but now he is back and he's getting more runners, and looking forward to seeing what Super 99 can do once he continues to get runners out there. CountryLifeFarm.com is the place to go. Josh Pons, Mike Pons, they do a phenomenal job. And Josh, can't thank you enough for spending some time here this morning. Like all of our guests, we're going to send you a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race, the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. We'll do that, and keep up the great work and keep it rolling.
Great. Thanks so much, Mike. Say hello to Anthony for me.
We'll do it. Josh Pons here on HRRN, CountryLifeFarm.com. And that is your Stallion Spotlight, brought to you by Red Brand Fence on this Saturday morning. Going to go ahead and get you now to our Lexus Legends of the Turf segment, brought to you every Saturday at this time by the Lexus store of Lexington. When I come back, Hall of Fame trainer Steve Asmussen is my guest. Stay with me right after your Lexus Legends of the Turf.
Going into the month of June 1953, only one thoroughbred in history, Whiskbroom II, had been able to sweep the handicap Triple Crown, consisting of the Metropolitan, Suburban, and Brooklyn handicaps. That had occurred in 1913. The reason for the difficulty in accomplishing the feat was the combination of the variance of distances and the unusually high weights asked to be shouldered by the better horses in these events. In May of 1953, Tom Fool, the startlingly handsome Greentree Stables Standard Bearer, had won the Joe H. Palmer handicap over 6 furlongs while toting an impost of 130 pounds. Now 4 years old, he had become a horse to be reckoned with at any distance with any impost. In the first leg of the handicap Triple Crown, the Metropolitan, he toted 130 pounds on an off track over the mile distance. Teddy Atkinson, the gentleman from Canada, who was his regular rider, got Tom Fool to the lead at the top of the stretch and tried to let the son of Meenow coast to the wire for the win. But Royal Vale made a late charge so that Atkinson had to get into Tom Fool, so to speak, to hold on for the score in a time of 1:35.3. In the Suburban at 1 1/4 miles, Tom Fool was a sounded impost of 134 pounds. And only 1 4-year-old colt, that being a salt, had been asked to carry more and win. No one wanted the lead in the Suburban, so Atkinson put Tom Fool out in front and rated him very nicely until the 16th pull, when Royal Vale came flying and got eyeball to eyeball in the charge to the wire. Atkinson on Tom Fool and Jackie Westrop on Royal Vale had to reach back for all their riding skills to get all they could out of their respective mounts. The two gallant thoroughbreds were locked together, matching strides, thundering for the finish in an absolutely marvelous spectacle of sport. Tom Fool stuck his head in front of the wire to chalk up the laurels in the second leg of the Triple Crown. Royal Vale had actually gained a slight advantage with 100 yards to go, but Tom Fool had courageously refused to back down and came on again with pure grit to win it. Only Greylag, Devil Diver, and 830 had won it with a higher impost. In his next start prior to the final leg, the Brooklyn, Tom Fool captured the Carter handicap under a burdensome 135 pounds. In the Brooklyn, he was assigned 136 pounds to shoulder for the very testing 12-furlong distance, and not only did he win it, but he won it with authority and then became the first horse in 40 years to accomplish that feat. He then went on to tally 4 more wins that year in winning the Wilson, the Whitney, the Sissonby Mile, and the Pimlico Special. Tom Fool had a year in 1953 that was indeed a watermark in thoroughbred racing. He had gone postward 10 times, all in handicaps, at distances from sprints to grueling routes, and won them all. Need there be any doubt whatsoever that he was dubbed Handicap Horse of the Year, and he was voted Champion Sprinter, if you can digest that. His composite racing record, 30 starts, 21 wins, 7 seconds, 1/3, 1/4. The stamp of greatness is emblazoned with a capital G next to his name, and the story of his capturing the handicap triple in 1953 is truly a great moment in racing.
Visionary design, visceral performance, and imaginary technology. That's Lexus. When every detail, every moment and every emotion is crafted by Lexus, it leads to amazing. Experience artistry that inspires, design that compels, and engineering that excites. This is Mike Pena, and I can tell you personally, as a Lexus owner, the enjoyment you'll experience from driving any of the Lexus model lines is unparalleled. Visit the Lexus store of Lexington today and see what I've been talking about for nearly 15 years. The people truly make the difference. Lexus has also been a longtime supporter of the horse industry, with a Keeneland shop located at the Lexus store of Lexington and through their sponsorship of Keeneland's Lexus Raven Run Stakes each fall. And remember, when you go to the Lexus store, ask for the Godfather, Tony Attiano. Talk horses and experience amazing in your brand new Lexus.
Pin Oak Studs Alternation is a top 10 third crop sire by earnings, black type winners, and graded stakes winners. With nearly $7 million in earnings to date, Alternation was represented by six black type horses in 2019. From a second crop, three-year-old daughter Serengeti Empress won the 2019 Grade 1 Kentucky Oaks and was runner-up in both the Grade 1 Test and Acorn Stakes. Serengeti Empress finished the year with a strong third to older mares in the Breeders' Cup Distaff and is a finalist for Eclipse Champion three-year-old filly. By Distorted Humor, millionaire graded stakes winner Alternation stands at Pin Oak Stud.
I'm visiting with Joe Brown Nicholson of Nicholson Insurance Agency. Joe, how are things in the insurance world?
Things are just fine in the insurance business, Mike. I'm grateful for the people who place their trust in Nicholson Insurance Agency to protect their homes, autos, farms, and horses against financial loss. As you know, we represent many insurance companies, so we can choose just the right company for each client at the right price. We welcome each opportunity to provide quality service to our clients.
So having many companies seems important.
Absolutely. Just like in thoroughbred racing and breeding, competition also works for the betterment of the insurance industry. I am constantly impressed with the ways companies respond to consumer demands with new insurance products and services.
Thanks, Joe. For your equine and general insurance needs, call Nicholson Insurance Agency at 859-224-7080 or visit us on Facebook. You gotta know Joe.
Airdrie Stud is proud to announce the arrival of Grade 1 winning millionaire Preservationist. The exceptionally talented son of Arch boasts Foundation mares Courtly D and Manad on the top and bottom of his blue-blooded pedigree. On the racetrack, he was one of 2019's best, taking the Grade 1 Woodward at Saratoga and Historic Suburban at Belmont Park.
And Preservationist has won the Suburban by 4.5 lengths over Catholic Boy and Pebble.
Preservationist, another exciting addition to the Airdrie Stud Stallion roster. Think about it.
The Florida thoroughbred industry is celebrating 75 years with the Florida Thoroughbred Breeders and Owners Association. And what a successful 75 it has been. Florida breds have won 19 Triple Crown races, 52 national championships, and along the way, making 170 racehorse millionaires, plus 66 Eclipse Awards, with two Florida breds, Imperial Hint and World of Trouble, receiving Eclipse Award nominations in 2020. The FDBOA, celebrating 75 years. Join Florida for the next 25.
This is Elliot Walden, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Here they come into the stretch of the Rebel Stakes. The real running begins here. Flying first class, the leader, and Curlin takes off after him on the outside. It is Curlin who takes command. Flying first class is second. Twyfelsberg running third at the rail. Exchanger is fourth. But Curlin quickly, like a shot, opened up a four-length lead. Officer Rock is going to make a run at him on the inside. It is Curlin under a hand ride. Robbie Alvarado finally asks him the little end. Curlin, very impressively, is going to take the Rebel by about five lengths. Officer Rocket was second. Twyfelsberg third. Going Ballistic got up for fourth. The mile in the 16th, a minute 44 and 3/5 seconds.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum, presented by Red Brand Fence on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Pena in our Lexington, Kentucky studios. Happy to have you back with me. That was Terry Wallace. Always great to have his voice on the program anytime you can get it. That was the 2007 running of the Rebel. Curlin, one of four winners in the race, saddled by Hall of Famer Steve Asmussen, who is with me now. He's looking to add to that total later today when he sends out three horses in this year's edition. And Steve, I know it's a busy morning for you, so I appreciate the time. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hard to believe it's been 20 years since the first time you won the Rebel, back in 2000 with a horse by the name of Snuck In.
Yeah, Snuck In was a great win for us to give cash. My brother wrote him. So it was very, very special then.
Yeah, family affair. And at that point, Steve, in 2000, you weren't necessarily Steve Asmussen's super trainer. You were still kind of trying to make your name in the sport, right?
Oh, very much so.
Yeah.
I think, the thing we love about racing, no matter how good you did yesterday, you got to line up and do it again today. You're constantly given the opportunity to prove yourself, and I think we have that opportunity again today with Rebel.
All right, so let's talk about the three horses that you're going to saddle today, and I guess we'll start with Basin since he is the horse that's second choice on the morning line. Tell me a little bit about Basin.
All right, brilliant horse. A grade one winner, winner of the hopeful, has trained extremely impressively this winter at the fairgrounds, and if he is capable as two turns as he is at one, he will be a superstar.
What's he show you that makes you think he will be good at two turns just like he was at one turn?
He's very athletic, very efficient mover, not overly heavy, just does not take a lot out of himself when he's going fast and dominating company.
Obviously, this wouldn't be the ultimate goal for Basin. That would come on the first Saturday in May, all things being equal. But you want to see him run a good race today. What do you do with a horse that hasn't been out since September, trying to get him ready for a peak effort on March 14th here today? What do you do as a trainer, Steve, to make sure he's ready?
Us with Basin, we just feel that we have plenty of bottom in him where he's in a position that he can protect himself and he's physically prepared for what's going to happen. Looks like we're going to have an off track today. Obviously, there's tremendous amounts of speed in there. He's in the capable hands of Castellano. And I think we just hopefully he's away from the gates cleanly. But we feel very good about the preparation that he has in him. And as you said, this is the first race of his season. And as we all know, we're hoping the third race of his season will be the Kentucky Derby.
Yeah, and no two wet tracks are the same, especially when you talk about Saratoga. He won the hopeful in the slop, and now you get a wet track at Oaklawn later today. But it has to give you a little bit of confidence to know that, okay, he at least handled a wet surface at Saratoga, doesn't it?
Oh, very much so. And when you're around him, I think that you would not worry about an off track. He is very athletic, cat-like, and very nimble on his feet. So I don't think that the racetrack will give him any trouble. It does appear that he'll have a little of it thrown on him by all the pace in the race, and that will be new for him. He had drawn the outside, even though he wasn't on the lead. He just had a very advantageous post position draw in the hopeful and handled it really well. But so there's a lot of new for him today, but you couldn't have any more confidence in a horse's ability than we do his.
You joined me on this show back on February 17th, and that was the morning of the Southwest Stakes, and you were going to saddle Silver Prospector that day. Well, we know he went on to win that race. He's back again in the Rebel. What have these past few weeks been like for Silver Prospector since that win?
I feel very good about the horse. He is, obviously talented with the success that he's had in the Kentucky Jockey Club against Tis the Law and horses of that caliber, and then run a very fast race in the Southwest. Handled wonderfully. He was away from the gates a lot sharper than he was in the Smarty Jones. I thought Ricardo had him in a perfect position with plenty of pace in front of him, and he came home nicely. A great amount of confidence when you can get to do the same thing on the same racetrack. So we do. I think that with all the three-year-old preps, it's very unlikely that your last race is good enough for your next one. And it's all about which three-year-olds are improving this time of year. And we feel very good about the group of three-year-olds that we do that.
Yeah, and you have the three in, of course, Basin and Silver Prospector, and then you have Accession, the long shot, 30-1. He is probably the furthest behind, I guess, the other two, if you want to look at it in that fashion. 1-for-8 lifetime. Well, tell me about Accession.
Right. As you mentioned, a grade one winner and a grade two winner in there,
yeah.
As well as Accession. He'll benefit from it backing up to a mile and a 16th. He's a very large horse, that is not completely to himself yet, and I think he'll benefit from backing up from the mile and an eighth of the Risen, this year's Risen Star, for the mile and a 16th today.
You know, it's interesting, Steve, because so often we hear trainers talk about trying to keep their horses separated as they move down the road to the Kentucky Derby, and here you are with three of the eight in the Rebel Stakes today. By design, is that the way you planned it?
Eye on the ball. I want to get these horses to the Derby and give them their one chance at the Derby. I think that the Derby pretty much propels the sport as far as their value and what people are wanting. And I did not feel that moving these horses across the country or some variable that we weren't comfortable with would answer any of the questions that we want going forward. And I greedily hope this isn't the last time they run against each other and they all stay on course for the Derby.
Talking with Hall of Fame trainer Steve Asmussen here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Steve, you've had a chance now to experience saddling a horse, running a horse with no fans in attendance at the racetrack. You were there. What was that like?
With me, it's pretty typical. Everybody says I'm in my own world anyway, right? It is weird pre-race, but during race, you're worried about the exact same things.
Yeah, so it's not, you're not even really paying attention to it when the horses are coming down the stretch.
You're right. You know, if they're acting typical for who they are, you know, where they're at yesterday, you know, a little bit of an off track. You were concerned about how some of them were going over it early in a race. And, you know, we had a couple pleasant surprises, a couple of disappointments. But it's the same worries. You know, are you going to show up today? Are you going to run your race?
You know, I talked about this at the top of the show, Steve, with so many other, well, pretty much every other major sport saying, okay, we're just going to suspend operations for the next 3-4 weeks, whatever it might be. Horse racing saying, all right, we'll take the approach of running with no fans and keeping the doors open. Is that the right approach for horse racing at this time?
I definitely believe that it is. They're not going to ask me what I'm thinking about something as large as that. But we're mentioning about three-year-olds, and this is extremely important to them. And the next step, staying in rhythm, getting the races you expect out of them. You know, they don't stay ready, they get ready. And I'm very anxious to see where we're at with this quality of three-year-old, and I think this is an opportunity to do so. Separate from that, I believe that Oakland's handle was up 7% yesterday from the corresponding day a year ago, the pre-Rebel card, and we're pretty much the only show in town, so take advantage of it.
Yeah, well said. I'd be remiss, Steve, if I didn't ask you about your daughter of Curlin, who you're going to send out in the Azari Stakes today as well. Lady Apple, who won the Houston Ladies Classic last time out. She took the Remington Park Oaks the time before that. Tell me a little bit about Lady Apple and how she's doing coming into today.
Very special filly. You know, so proud of what she accomplished last year. When she was third in the Oaks, she was the youngest horse in the field. Not a real big statured filly, just looks like a deer almost. And as good as she did last year, everybody felt like, with being a Curlin, with time, that she would get to the next level. And then for her to come out of the box and beat two accomplished grade one winners in her first run of the year, we were so proud of her with her run in the Houston Ladies.
I'm going to let you go in a second, Steve, but I do have to ask you about Midnight Bisou and that performance in Saudi Arabia. What an effort she put in that day.
Just what an amazing mare. You know, how consistent she was last year in her attitude, in her training, with all the travel she had, just her game face, the way she goes about exercise, the way she goes about her works. What an unbelievable blessing to be around a quality horse like she is. And then for her to go to Saudi Arabia and run as valiantly as she did against the best horses in the world. And in the paddock and in the closure, and as exciting as everything was, what a beautiful group of horses they had assembled. And for her to show up the way she did, we couldn't be any more proud of her. And we were, Midnight Bisou today arrived at Keeneland out of quarantine her first day. She had flown back to Chicago, quarantined there a week, and she's back in the racing stable this morning. So we're relieved and excited about that.
Well, I know my good friend Jeff Bloom and Bloom Racing think that she should now be awarded first place in the Saudi Cup, knowing what we now know about the situation with trainer Jason Service and Maximum Security, who won that race. Do you agree?
She's the best horse in the world. That's how I feel. That's how I felt going over there. That's how I feel coming back. And that's how I feel today. She is a true blessing, and anybody who's been around her knows her true quality.
Only Dale Baird has saddled more winners in the history of our sport than Steve Asmussen. Steve, appreciate the visit and spending some time here. I know it's a busy day. I'll let you go. All the best and good luck this afternoon.
All right. Happy handicapping.
All right. Steve Asmussen here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. And, yeah, he'll be busy today. He has horses running not just at Oaklawn, but Sam Houston and all over the country, as you might expect. And, Midnight Bisou, we'll see if the folks in Saudi Arabia agree that she should be awarded first place. And that's a lot of money. Keep in mind, right, was it 50% to the winner? That's $10 million on the line. If they would say yes, Maximum Security is disqualified. You got to take your shot there. I don't blame him. You have to. All right, going to get to another break. Still to come in the second half of the program, Kip Elzer from Kirkwood going to join me to talk about the two-year-old sales. Mark Cassie will be with me to share his thoughts on the news coming out this week with the indictments of Jorge Navarro, of Jason Service. We'll talk to Mark about that at 9:20 Eastern. And then Bill Thomason, president of Keeneland, he'll be with me at 9:40 to fill you in on what Keeneland is doing and their preparations concerning COVID-19 and keeping everybody safe for the upcoming spring meet. That's all ahead. But when I come back, our industry star of the week, presented by Stuart Morris, right here on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for the Kentucky Derby and Triple Crown.
Power.
Caraconti has won.
Passion.
It's Caraconti winning by about a neck or so.
Performance.
Caraconti and O'Dor. Caraconti.
Gainesway Stallion Caraconti. A precocious Group 1 winner as a 2-year-old and a 3-time Grade 1 winner, including a scintillating win in the Breeders' Cup Mile in 1:32 and 4 fifths, recording a 1:14 buyer speed figure. Caraconti possesses a strong Stormcat male line and hails from a top female family, which includes the hugely influential champion Miask as his third dam. The only second crop sire with graded stakes winners on dirt and turf, Caraconti's first crop of 3-year-olds includes Sol Volante, winner of the Grade 3 Sam F. Davis Stakes, and undefeated colt Kenzai Warrior, who was pointed to the Group 1 English 2000 Guineas. Value priced at just $10,000, Caraconti gets the gold, according to Chris McGrath's Value Podium in the TDN. He has the performance, the pedigree, and the physical. Come see Caraconti at Gainesway.
Hi, Tony.
Hey, Matthew.
There's a reason why Tony's Steaks and Seafood is my favorite restaurant. It's because I want to feel part of the family. Isn't that right, Tony?
That's right. There's a saying on the wall that I truly believe in. There's always room for one more at our table. We just want you to be part of our family.
And believe me, you will be. It's Tony's Steaks and Seafood right across from Triangle Park. Visit them at TonysSteaksAndSeafood.com.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence educating and developing industry leaders for over 33 years. Classes are taught by industry experts in the state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
It's time now to shine the spotlight on the Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week.
Nyquist and Exaggerator, they're coming to the line together, and Nyquist is still unbeaten. He has won the Kentucky Derby!
Oh my goodness, look at Frosted today! Frosted's 10 in front! Frosted is absolutely robbed in the Met Mile.
Talk about a dynamic duo. Darley Stallions Nyquist and Frosted put on quite a show in the Kentucky Derby and Met Mile, respectively. Nyquist, of course, was the first unbeaten juvenile champion to win the Derby since Seattle Slough, and Frosted's 123 buyer speed figure in the Met Mile is still the highest buyer in the past 13 years. Both exciting young stallions will be represented by their first two-year-olds at the OBS March Sale, and they are your Darley Taking the Reins Performers of the Week. Learn more about Nyquist, Frosted, and all the Darley Stallions by visiting DarleyAmerica.com.
Hello, this is Steve Cawthon, thoroughbred jockey, winner of the Triple Crown 1978 aboard Affirmed, and you are listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Red Brand Fence.
Don't forget that Stuart Morris offers a boutique full-service bloodstock operation, and he wants to thank his owners, his clients, and his team. He knows that his success is because of you. And with multiple stakes horses over the past 3 years, including Henley's Joy, Our Brain Trust, and Malagasy, Stuart Morris is your source for success at the highest levels. Visit the Stuart Morris consignment at all the major sales coming up throughout the year. Well, it is time for your Industry Star of the Week, and this segment brought to you every Saturday at this time by Stuart Morris. And this week's guest joined me on Trainer Talk on Wednesday, Lori Testerman. And Lori has had success in this sport from pretty much day one, but she's worked her tail off to make it all come together. And during the hour-long interview on Trainer Talk, which you can listen to at horseracingradio.net, one of the questions I asked her was to tell me a story of a horse with a personality that maybe caught her a little off guard or struck her in a way that she's never going to forget. And here's what Lori had to say.
Well, of course, there's Disco Rico, and he was a phenomenal horse. He was really, really not only athletic and beautiful to look at, but it was amazing because when people would come into the barn, he was like a magnet. They would go to his stall, having never even been in the barn. They'd walk in, and he would just draw people to him. He was just a grand, grand animal. And a funny story was I had the DeRicos are wonderful people, and I'd had a horse for them, and they wanted to send him to New York, but they felt bad taking the horse from me. So they went down, I believe it was to Florida, and they bought a Maryland bred Disco Rico to send to me. And he was a great big strapping colt, but just a charm to work with, an absolute charm. Would love glazed donuts. Every morning he had to have a glazed donut before he started.
A glazed donut?
Oh, I loved him. Absolutely loved him.
That's great.
We'd have to stop at Dunkin' Donuts on the way in the morning just so he could get his treat. And when he would go out to work, you had to allot a minimum of 30 minutes because he had to walk out, look at the tracks, watch what's going on. Then he would back up on the track, and he'd have to stand there for another 15 or 20 minutes. And then he would gallop so leisurely to the pole, and as soon as you gave him his head, he'd go 3/8 and 33. And not even turn a hair, not bat an eye. I mean, he was just the most athletic horse. I had another nice colt named Excellent Dan, who he won a couple local stakes, and the owner ended up wanting to sell him. So when it came time to sell him, the people were coming to pick him up. And we knew him. We knew his quirks. But if he didn't know you, you weren't going in the stall.
Mm-hmm.
So they called me to please come help them get in the stall to pick up the horse.
Wow.
That was pretty funny.
Wow, visiting with Lori Testerman.
But I've had a lot over the years, and I... You talk about passion. I've been passionate about these animals since I was a toddler. They're amazing. They're in tune. You can't have a bad day with a good horse.
That's Lori Testerman, our Industry Star of the Week, presented by Stuart Morris, and so much more that she had to say. And her story is pretty cool, too. You can go back and listen to the whole program, horseracingradio.net.
Horse Racing Radio Network on Apple Podcasts as well. Some good stuff from Lori. And that Disco Rico story, having to stop at Dunkin' Donuts to get a glazed donut every morning when she went to the barn. That's one of those, you know, who knew that, I certainly didn't, who knew that horses would get that into things like a glazed donut, but Disco Rico certainly did, and Lori Testerman, our industry star of the week. Again, hour number two kicks off with Kip Elzer from Kirkwood talking about the two-year-old sales and the Fasig-Tipton announcement, of course, that they will cancel the Gulfstream sale and move those horses up to the Mid-Atlantic two-year-old sale in May. We'll talk to Kip about that decision. We'll talk to him about the OBS sale, which comes up on Tuesday and Wednesday. And we'll visit with Mark Cassie in the second half of the show. We'll visit with Bill Thomason from Keeneland as well. So a lot of things still to come. Back with hour two right after we pause. 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Victory Gallop is still third, but he's coming real quiet. He's a bit leg weary. Victory Gallop is trying. Here's the line. Real Quiet wins the 124th running of the Kentucky Derby.
This is unbelievable. Zenyatta, what a performance. One wheel. Looked impossible.
Welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by Red Brand Fence.
On the inside, unaccounted for. On the outside, Soul of the Manor. And here he is, the incomparable, invincible, unbeatable Cigar.
And here it is. The 37-year wait is over. American Pharoah is finally the one. American Pharoah has won the Triple Crown.
Now, here's Mike Pena.
Welcome back. Hour number two of the Equine Forum. If you missed any portion of the first half of the show, my interview with Josh Ponce from Country Life or Hall of Famer Steve Asmussen and our industry star of the week, Lori Testerman, head back over to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can check out the podcast of this program and all of our shows at your leisure, horseracingradio.net. Couple Derby points races today. You have the Rebel down at Oaklawn. Talked to Steve Asmussen about his three contenders. Nadal is the morning line favorite in there, 5-2. Son of Claiborne Stallion Blame. Eight horses set to go to the post in the Rebel. Bob Baffert has dominated the race. That's why Nadal should get your attention today. Most recently, he won the race with Cupid in 2016, but he's won the Rebel a record six times. He holds a lot of records in this sport. That's just another one. Turfway, you have the Jeff Ruby Stakes. 12 horses going to the post there. Wesley Ward sends out Invader, 3-1 on the morning line from post 11. Mike Maker has the second choice at 7-2 from post 12. That's Field Pass, and those are the two trainers battling it out for the trainer's title at Turfway, and we'll see if Wesley or Mike can get the top prize later today. Post time 6:42 Eastern for the Jeff Ruby Stakes. The Rebel set to go at 6:23 Eastern time. Well, there is action in other places, mainly in the sales ring at OBS, and I'm going to talk to Kip Elzer coming up in just a couple of moments. He, of course, with Kirkwood, he has four horses consigned to that sale. He has several others that were scheduled to be sold at the Fasig-Tipton Gulfstream sale on April 1st. But as we know, that sale has been canceled because of COVID-19, and they will move those horses to the Mid-Atlantic sale, and that sale comes up in May, middle of May, May 18th and 19th. And Kip is indeed with me now. Kip, good morning.
Good morning, Mike.
How are you?
Well, things are a little up in the air here. We're just trying to sort out how we do things next. Here at OBS, that's going to proceed as scheduled, and now we sort of got to push things back till later in the year when all of this settles down.
What's the turnout like at OBS now, Kip? Have people stayed away because of the virus, or is it business as usual?
So far, it's business as usual. We've got the usual number of people in the stands, the usual number of people watching the videos, usual number of phone calls after horses work, whether they like certain videos and aren't quite as high on certain other ones. I don't. So far, we don't see any negative effects.
You had, what, I guess, 8 2-year-olds set to sell at the Gulfstream sale on April 1st. And as I mentioned a moment ago, that sale is now canceled and those horses moving up to Maryland in middle of May. Will you take all 8 to Maryland now? Is that the plan?
That's the plan right now. I don't see, it's always been a good track and a good sale up there. It's not what we originally planned with those horses, but we'll just sit on them a little longer, get them a little farther along in their training, and take them up there.
Will you breeze the horses there, Kip, or will you take the same approach you do with the Gulfstream sale and say, we're just going to gallop them?
Well, I'm not quite sure about just how we're going to handle that. That late in the year, I think we probably should be doing something. If you're getting the horse ready to go to the races, by May, you're breezing them.
Yep.
Whether we actually have them go all out like most of them up there will, I haven't really decided yet. That's still up in the air, but we're gonna hold to the principle of the no breeze show, and we'll do. If I had to guess right now, these horses will be going a steady 3/8 by then, rather than a very fast 1/8 or 1/4. But right now, that's just a guess. I haven't talked to clients, owners yet, and really mapped out the schedule.
I remember sitting down with you on this very same show a few years back. I think we were at Gulfstream Park, and you were talking about the idea of bringing horses to the Gulfstream sale and not breezing them. And it was such a unique concept at that point. But now you've got a few years under your belt doing this. What's the reception been like from horsemen as you continue to take this approach?
I think it's been very, very positive. The horses have sold well. We've had a really good percentage of winners and graded class horses come out of the two small groups we've sold so far. It's all been positive, and I really want to keep it going.
Have you noticed a difference in the horses that you gallop as opposed to the ones that you breeze? Are there any noticeable differences in those?
We have not had to stop on any horses after the sale.
Yeah.
Or the buyers have not. We have sold every horse. So those are two positives right there. I mean, it's just much closer to the program of getting a horse ready to go to the races. You happen to stop at a sale on the way rather than pointing a horse for a sale, and that's your goal. So it's just a different focus.
Yeah, and those horses, by the way, we'll talk about the horses that the quartet of horses that you have going here in OBS March in just a minute, but the horses that you'll take to Maryland now, those 8 that were scheduled to go at Gulfstream, you talk about pedigree power too, Kip. I mean, you're talking about a son of Tappet. You're talking about a daughter of American Pharaoh, a son of Curlin, a daughter of Hardspun. These horses bring a lot of pedigree to the table too.
Oh, we're going to bring some guns up there. I mean, I'm going to have my usual group of solid, nice horses that fit the middle of the market, but we're going to bring some real guns up there. And, that's a great sale top to bottom. Mucho Gusto came out of there, as everybody knows, after he was presented here at OBS and didn't get the response we were looking for. And he's gone on and he's waving our flag all over the world now.
Yeah, he's a special horse. What do you remember about him when he was in your consignment?
Just a very forward-looking, alert, wanted to do right kind of horse. And he shows that racing. I mean, he shows up every time, pricks his ears, and here we go.
Yeah, he's a really good horse, and looking forward to seeing more from him as we move throughout 2020 here. All right, let's talk about the four horses that you're selling on Tuesday and Wednesday at OBS. You're in barn number 9. You have a filly by Will Take Charge, a colt by Dialed In, filly by Vancouver, and a colt by Wicked Strong. So tell me a little bit about each of them.
Dialed In, colt, quick, solid, very, very nice horse, not real big. But a neat, well-balanced, good-going colt. Will Take Charge, filly, very much the same, just great attitude, not real big, but wants to go out and do her job every time you put the tack on her. Had a good breeze the other day. X-rays and scopes on all four of them are meticulously clean. I was very glad to hear that. The Vancouver filly, he's my sleeper first-year sire this year. She just covers a tremendous amount of ground. Did go down there on the left lead, but very, very smooth action and a great gallop out. Going back, Mucho Gusto went down here on his left lead, and he turned out. And then the Wicked Strong colt is a big, tough, solid horse. Bred by the late Johnny Griggs, who bred so many solid, solid horses up in Kentucky there. And he's the last of Johnny's group, but comes from a farm that raises great horses and a very good, solid colt.
Talking with Kip Elzer from Kirkwood Stables, you can go to kirkwoodstables.com if you want to learn more about each of the horses that are going to be selling at the OBS March sale. Of course, you can go see him in barn number 9 at OBS as well. You can even watch video on his website of each of those horses breezing, and I would recommend doing that and then giving Kip a call and saying, hey, what do I have to do to get in on one of these horses, because he has a long history of selling top horses, including a horse like Mucho Gusto, who is his recent stable star, if you will. Kip, are there certain characteristics with these young horses, even as just getting started with their two-year-old careers, if you will, are there certain characteristics that you've seen in all the good ones that you say, yeah, this horse has that it factor?
Well, physically, they have to be efficient getting over the ground. And then, so much of this is mental, because they are put under a lot of pressure when they get to the races, and they have to have mental composure, a good attitude that will let them keep climbing that pyramid to get to the top. I mean, I'm a high school coach hoping these kids go on to play Division I and then go on to the pros. But they've got to have the attitude that they want to do the job for them to get to the top.
Well, you've done pretty good coaching them up over the years, Kip, and I want to wish you all the best with this particular sale coming up on Tuesday and Wednesday, and then we'll talk before we get to that Maryland sale as well.
Good to talk to you, Mike.
All right, good luck, Kip Elzer, Kirkwood Stables. Again, kirkwoodstables.com is where you can go to learn more about all of his horses that he will be selling here at OBS, and then the horses he'll be taking up to Maryland now in place of that Fasig Tipton Gulfstream sale. Mark Cassie is coming up in the next segment, and Mark is going to share his thoughts on our sport today. And is the sport capable of policing and regulating itself? That's our poll question this morning. You can weigh in at HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. And so far, several of you weighing in on this, 78% of HRN Nation saying, no, our sport is not capable of policing and regulating itself. So what's the next step? We'll talk to Mark Cassie about that in the next segment. But time now for your weekly Calling All Three-Year-Olds with Bobby Newman, presented by Spendthrift.
They're all in line. And they're off.
Spendthrift Farm presents Calling All Three-Year-Olds with Bobby Newman.
There were three huge races on the Derby Trail last weekend, and two were won by Sons of Into Mischief. Santa Anita held the San Felipe Stakes, and Authentic was trying to keep his record unblemished. He took the lead at once, set an honest pace while getting mild pressure from Breeders' Cup champ Storm the Court, put that one away on the far turn, and held off the late charge of Honor AP. Strong effort by both of the top two finishers. Final time for the mile and a 16th was 1:43.2. At Aqueduct, Mischievous Alex was coming off back-to-back stakes wins sprinting and was favored to win the Gotham. He got a nice stalking trip under Kendrick Carmouche before taking command on the turn en route to a two-length victory. Untitled and Attachment Rate picked up the minor awards and continue to improve. Bettors thought the Tampa Bay Derby was a match race between Sole Volante and Chance It, but it was 49-1 long shot King Guillermo who pressed a modest pace and had plenty left to draw away to win by almost five in a solid time of 1:42.3. It was a powerhouse performance that surprised almost everyone. Favorite Sole Volante was far back early before kicking into gear to flash home second, while Chance It disappointed and checked in fifth. All three winners last weekend picked up 50 Derby points, which should be enough to get them into the Kentucky Derby field. The Derby Trail heads to Arkansas and Northern Kentucky today with the Rebel Stakes at Oaklawn and the Jeff Ruby Stakes at Turfway. Bob Baffert's undefeated Nadal heads a strong Rebel field that also includes hopeful winner Basin, Southwest winner Silver Prospector, and the undefeated No Parole. Whoever wins earns 50 valuable Derby points. 20 points go to the winner of the Jeff Ruby Stakes, and the Wesley Ward-trained Invader looks to continue his winning ways. His last two races at Turfway have been spectacular. I'll be back with this week's top five list right after this word from Spendthrift.
Spendthrift Farm is at it again, now offering breeders our best incentives yet, including deep discounts on young stallions and proven stallions. And for the first time, 30 days paid boarding at the farm of your choice so that you can breed your mare to a stallion from the most diverse roster in North America without the burden of boarding costs. Serious deals on serious stallions, only at Spendthrift, the Breeders Farm. Call today to learn more, 859-294-0030, or visit SpendthriftFarm.com.
This week's top five list of Derby contenders looks like this. Numbers 1 and 2, Authentic and Honor AP, the 1-2 finishers in the San Felipe. They should meet again in the Santa Anita Derby on April 4th. Number 3 is Independence Hall, trying to get back on his winning ways in the Florida Derby on March 28th. Numbers 4 and 5, King Guillermo and Sole Volante, the 1-2 finishers of the Tampa Bay Derby. King Guillermo going to train up to the Kentucky Derby, while Sole Volante may run in the Wood Memorial April 4th if he needs more points. That's your Calling All Three-Year-Old segment presented by Spendthrift, the Breeders' Farm.
Just 49 days, 9 hours, 32 minutes, and 9 seconds until that Run for the Roses on May 2nd at Churchill Downs. And a lot of those questions going to be answered over the coming weeks and the next couple of months as well. Mark Cassie is in the on-deck circle. I'll talk to him next right here on the Equine Forum on HRRN, presented by Red Brand Fence, manufacturing the V-Mesh and non-climb fence you see on horse farms worldwide.
Hello, I'm Michael Blowen, founder of Old Friends Thoroughbred Retirement Farm. One of our highest priorities for these living legends is safety. That's why the fence we trust most at Old Friends is the V-Mesh Keepsake from Red Brand. Keepsake features a V-Mesh weave to prevent hooves from getting caught, and the mesh design flexes on impact. Learn more about the quality, safety, and long-lasting value of Keepsake V-Mesh Horse Fence by visiting redbrand.com.
The Florida Thoroughbred industry is celebrating 75 years with the Florida Thoroughbred Breeders and Owners Association. And what a successful 75 it has been. Florida Breds have won 19 Triple Crown races, 52 national championships, and along the way, making 170 racehorse millionaires, plus 66 Eclipse Awards, with two Florida Breds, Imperial Hint and World of Trouble, receiving Eclipse Award nominations in 2020. The FTBOA, celebrating 75 years. Join Florida for the next 25.
Time-tested Broken Vow continues to deliver quality black-type stakes horses at a 15% clip. The top son of Unbridled has sired over 150 black-type horses, 80 black-type winners, and over $75 million in earnings. Among the 12 black-type horses sired by Broken Vow in 2019 was dual Canadian Classic winner Tone Broke, winner of classic races on dirt and turf. Also the sire of Imprimis, the Speedy Keeneland graded stakes winner of over $440,000. Give your mare a great start with a proven sire. Broken Vow, standing at Pin Oak Stud.
Undefeated Grade 1 winner Mastery won impressively in his 2-year-old debut at Santa Anita. From there, he captured the Grade 3 Bob Hope Stakes and completed his juvenile campaign with a dominant performance in the Grade 1 Los Alamitos Futurity. At 3, the top-rated son of Candy Ride sizzled in the San Felipe. Now, his much-anticipated first crop are bringing top dollar in the sales ring. Mastery, standing at Claiborne Farm.
Visionary design, visceral performance, and imaginary technology. That's Lexus. When every detail, every moment, and every emotion is crafted by Lexus, it leads to amazing. Experience artistry that inspires, design that compels, and engineering that excites. This is Mike Pena, and I can tell you personally, as a Lexus owner, the enjoyment you'll experience from driving any of the Lexus model lines is unparalleled. Visit the Lexus store of Lexington today and see what I've been talking about for nearly 15 years. The people truly make the difference. Lexus has also been a longtime supporter of the horse industry, with a Keeneland shop located at the Lexus store of Lexington and through their sponsorship of Keeneland's Lexus Raven Run Stakes each fall. And remember, when you go to the Lexus store, ask for the Godfather, Tony Attiano. Talk horses and experience amazing in your brand new Lexus.
Unanimous champion 2-year-old and 3-time Grade 1 winner Classic Empire got off to a fantastic start with his first weanlings at the November sales. Averaging over $100,000 from 27 sold, up to 8 times his initial $35,000 stud fee. Right on the same cross as champion freshman sire American Pharoah, Classic Empire's outstanding race record is backed up with a stallion's pedigree. Being from the family of Harlan's Holiday, Ride the Rails, and Bold Nijin. Standing for just $20,000, Classic Empire looks like a serious value for 2020.
Hi, I'm Leah Jarmati, and I love listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Red Brand Fence.
Today, we announce criminal charges against racehorse trainers Jorge Navarro and Jason Service, as well as 9 other trainers, 7 veterinarians, and 9 drug suppliers and distributors, all involved in the cruel and systematic doping of racehorses across the United States and indeed around the world, using misbranded, adulterated, and dangerous performance-enhancing drugs.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Pena in our Lexington studios, and that's the way things sounded on Monday when the news came out from federal prosecutors announcing the doping scheme involving trainers Jason Service, Jorge Navarro, and several others. There are still names being mentioned even as we speak here. It's a developing situation. The news disturbing on so many levels. And to help us figure this out is Mark Cassie. He's nice enough to spend a little time here this morning sharing his thoughts on the situation. Mark, first of all, good morning, my friend.
Good morning, Mike. Not sure I can help figure it out, but
I'll tell you, when I say disturbing on so many levels, there are a lot of different things that come into play when you hear this kind of news. And as somebody like yourself who has, like the majority of people, the vast majority of people that play this game, done things the right way and developed your business the right way, played by the rules, when you hear that announcement and you hear those things come out in racing, what were some of the first things that came to mind for you?
Just joy. Joy. Because for so long, you know, we've known it's been going on, and to sit there and see it happen. And you know, I think back and I tell, you know, I think about how those cyclists must have felt when they worked their entire life to, you know, to be all they can be and watch Lance Armstrong go cycling by and knowing that he had an edge, and then finally figuring out that it was true, he was cheating. That's the way, you know, Mike, I've been doing this my entire life. I said, you know, it's frustrating, but in life you have to figure out what's more important, winning at all costs or your integrity. And unfortunately for those people, winning at all costs was more important than their integrity. But now they all pay the price.
Yeah, and you mentioned, you know, you kind of got the sense, I think everybody got the sense that in every sport, Mark, there are people that are always going to try and get the edge and cheat, and that's what was going on here. Considering the fact that people like yourself who play the game the right way had a sense that something was going on, how frustrating is that for you as a trainer doing things in the right manner to all of a sudden be battling with people that you know are taking an edge somewhere, but they can't quite figure out what it is?
Oh, it's very frustrating. And, you know, so I've went for the last 15 or 20 years, 15 years, 10 years, I don't know, knowing in my heart that, you know, the level, the playing field wasn't level. And I think you asked how I felt that morning. It's like I don't know. It was just like relief. It was just, you know, when you know something and you know it, and finally when it comes true, it was crazy. And I know a lot of people look at it as, you know, possibly a bad thing. I looked at it as a good thing. We have a shot. Now, we can't stop. We can't stop right now because that's just the tip of the iceberg. You know, I came out, I said, if it walks like a duck, looks like a duck, it's probably a duck. You know, we see things, we're still seeing them, things that defy logic. And then, you know, thinking back, we just lost two extremely good horse trainers recently because they can't take it. You can't compete against it. And if you play by the rules, you're at such a disadvantage. And I'm thinking, I think about trainers right now that are struggling, that are great horse trainers. They shouldn't be struggling, or guys in the past that we've lost because their integrity was more important than winning at all costs. And I mean, I mean, look at a David Carroll. David Carroll's a great horseman, and I'm very Cassie Racing. Team Cassie is very, you know, happy to have him. But there's a lot of David Carrolls out there that have went by the wayside because they chose to do the right thing. And so that's sad. As you know, I wrote, it was just timing. I had no idea what you know, what was going to happen with the FBI. But I wrote a letter about Comburo a few days prior. And, you know, it was, what's the saying? I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore.
Yeah.
And I think that's the way we've got to do it. Like I said, we've started this. This is our time to come clean and make our sport better. I recently had an owner call me a couple days ago, and he said, how are my horses doing? I said, well, they've gotten a lot faster over the last couple days.
Well, you know, Mark, you know what's really concerning?
The competition's going to get slower.
Yeah. Well, you know what's really concerning to me with this whole situation? And look, this is – if you are a person that kind of had a sense that the playing field wasn't level, you weren't alone. There had to be others in horse racing that had this same sense, maybe even people that are in a position to do things to prevent people from cheating and trying to take an edge, that had to have a sense. But regardless if they did or not, this took the FBI and wiretaps and a couple year long investigation to make this whole thing come to light. Is the industry capable of policing and regulating itself?
Well, obviously that's a good question. And as you know, I recently supported the government, you know, bringing in the government, and this was why. Anybody that knows me knows that I believe that horses should have Lasix. I just think it's a humane thing for them. But I was willing to give up Lasix because I'm just so tired of the cheating. And I think what needs to happen is, and I think I read a study a few weeks back about from Asia, or I think it was a conference, you know, the drug testing is not working. It doesn't work. But what we have to do is, if something defies logic, I think we have to investigate it. And I personally believe that, and I think if you wanted to if every racetrack, when you sign that application to get your trainer's license, your owner's license, your groom's license, that at any time, you know, the governing body there, the racetrack, can come in, question you, ask you anything they want. Because if you look, the way they caught Lance Armstrong, the way they caught the baseball, the steroid users, how they caught the cheaters in the World Series, it's by people talking. And I've said all along, you know, if it smells bad, it's probably bad. Well, let's give the authorities a little more leeway. We don't have to have the FBI to do this. I can tell you, you know, to me, if you ask 100 horsemen 2 weeks ago, who's cheating? Well, the two guys that just got arrested would be on number one on the list. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is, I find it just amazing for racing managers and owners to say they had no idea. If that's the case, then you might maybe need to find, if you're a racing manager, you might want to find a new profession. Because that's the reason they're there. Because again, winning was more important than what was going on. And to sit there and say anything different is just not true.
Well, and one thing you bring up is you know, one thing you bring up, Mark, is racetracks or state organizations going to a trainer's barn, being able to ask any questions that they would like at any point and any time. Don't we already have that in place with stewards and with state organizations?
If we do, Mike, not enough of it's being done.
Yeah. Well, and it brings me back to the other point. Are we capable as an industry of regulating ourselves, or do we just not have a willingness to do it?
Well, I think too many times, and this, again, this goes to, you know, the racetracks. I think some places were too scared that it was going to hurt their business.
Yeah, that's inexcusable.
What's happening, and one of my motivations for my letter and coming out was that I had one of my biggest owners said he didn't know if he wanted to be involved in it anymore because of all the cheating.
Mm-hmm.
And I can tell you, I was questioning whether I wanted to be involved in it anymore. When I started questioning it also to myself, you asked Mike, how does it feel to know that there's not a level playing field? There's guys beating you. You work your entire life. You try to do everything by the book. Treat the horses, love the horses, and then you have guys beating you that have no care for the health of the horse, the welfare of the horse. Then you question whether you want to do it anymore, and that's why I wrote my letter. I had owners, a very big owner, questioning whether he ever wanted to do it again. And myself asking those same questions. And I can tell you, since that happened, my outlook on horse racing has changed 100%. I'm not questioning whether I want to do it again. It's making me want to be that much stronger.
Yeah, Mark Cassie with me here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mark, just a couple of minutes left. I have to get to another commercial break. Bill Thomason from Keeneland coming up to talk about what they're doing with COVID-19 and some of the preparations they're making for their spring meet coming up. So that comes up next. But, once again, racing is faced with an opportunity here to make a statement and to show that it can do this on its own. So where do you see the sport going with this and this information that we now have? How do we come out of this stronger and better?
Well, I'm hoping that it's not over. And the other thing that we have to look long and hard at, this is not just starting. This is just not starting at the races. We need to make sure our young horses are treated better and taken care of. And that is, too, on a level playing field. That's extremely important. And like I said, whether we can get the National Integrity Act passed, but if we can't, and even while that is in the thing, these racetracks have to be stronger. Let's start having the raids. Let's ask more questions. One thing about it, you go and as we've seen with this FBI investigation, there's a lot of people knew what was going on. We don't have to have wiretaps to do it. We can go straight to the sources and question them. And you know what? These guys may have some employee that they think's loyal and would never tell on them. But you put that guy and you say, look, if you lie, you're going to jail. That changes a lot of people's tune. And I think we need to do more of that.
Yeah, interesting comments. Mark Cassie here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, and so many different levels to this, too. You talk about the ownership angle, and do you want to be involved in this sport? If you're a new owner, do you want to get involved? Does this completely turn you off? If you're a breeder, do you still want to breed to a stallion that was trained by Jason Service, Jorge Navarro, or anyone else involved in that? And if you're a buyer, do you want to buy a horse who is by one of those stallions? This has trickle-down effect in our sport across the board. And Mark, listen, I can't thank you enough for spending some time. We could spend another hour talking about this issue, and I'm sure we'll touch on it later on. But meantime, all the best with the horses.
One thing, Mike,
go for it.
Before you go, is I would encourage, all owners or new owners or new trainers, I think, this is a new beginning, and we're going to make the sport better, and it's going to be great again. And just hang in there, and at least you're going to know we're going to have a fair shot. I can tell you this: I am putting all my efforts in making sure it is, and I'm just hoping, and I see others are doing the same, and but we need everybody. We need the owners to pay more attention. We need to, racing managers to pay more attention. We need racing officials to pay more attention. And if something defies logic, if it looks too good to be true, it usually is.
Yep. Mark Cassie here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mark, appreciate the visit, my friend. Thank you so much.
Have a great day.
All right. Yeah, I mean, sobering words, but I think you spot on. But, you know, we have this in place. We have stewards. We have people that are governing bodies in our sport, so to speak, in every state. And we need to do more. We have to be better. Or you have federal intervention. And I think the majority of people would tell you that's not what they want for our sport. We have to find a way to police it ourselves. And as Mark said, go to the barns. Ask as many questions as you want, as often as you want, and be there. But take an interest. The one statement he made that sticks out to me, if you asked 100 trainers who was cheating, the two people, Jason Servais and Jorge Navarro, who were just caught in this scheme, would be at the top of the list. That's what Mark said. So if he knew it, and he says, if you ask 100 trainers, then certainly there were other people that knew about this. But as an industry, we chose to look the other way. And Mark also said, maybe it's because they thought it would hurt their business. Inexcusable. Can't happen anymore. Can't happen. Well, that's just part of the major news that came out this week. COVID-19 affecting our sport as well. We'll talk to Bill Thomason from Keeneland, the president and CEO of that great organization, when I return. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN, presented by Red Brand Fence, manufacturing the V-Mesh and non-climb fence you see on horse farms worldwide.
Gio Ponti, a three-time Eclipse Award winner.
Gio Ponti adds the million to his grade one collection.
Champion older male.
The champion, Gio Ponti, to take the Shadwell Turf Mile for Ramon Dominguez.
And two-time champion male turf horse with career earnings over $6 million.
Final 16th of the Shadwell Turf Mile, Gio Ponti, Wise Dan, charging after Get Stormy. Gio Ponti from the outside. How about that? Gio Ponti will go back to the winner's circle.
In 2019, Gio Ponti is the sire of 10 stakes horses and 7 stakes winners from 5.5 furlongs to 12 furlongs, including Grade 2 winner America's Tail, Grade 3 winner Gucci Factor, and stakes winners Long Runner, Dubini, Giovanna Blues, and Olympic Runner. In addition, Gio Ponti has produced champion sprinter and Grade 1 Breeders' Cup sprint winner Dre Fong and $1 million Queen's Plate winner Sir Dudley Diggs. Gio Ponti, standing at Castleton Lions.
Woodford Feed, where tradition merges with technology. Family-owned since 1940 and providing exceptional customer service, Woodford Feed specializes in the highest quality feed, using only the finest ingredients to ensure optimal nutrition for your horses. In addition, Woodford Feed can help with all your farm needs, including field seed, fertilizer, and weed control. So whether your horse is sprinting around the racetrack or has a foal by her side, count on Woodford Feed to provide the quality nutrition necessary to perform at the highest level. Woodford Feed, Versailles, Kentucky.
The Florida thoroughbred industry is celebrating 75 years with the Florida Thoroughbred Breeders and Owners Association. And what a successful 75 it has been. Florida breds have won 19 Triple Crown races, 52 national championships, and along the way, making 170 racehorse millionaires, plus 66 Eclipse Awards, with two Florida breds, Imperial Hint and World of Trouble, receiving Eclipse Award nominations in 2020. The FTBOA, celebrating 75 years. Join Florida for the next 25.
Racing at Gulfstream.
Catch year-round world-class horse racing whenever you'd like from North America's premier thoroughbred horse racing destination, Gulfstream Park. With the championship meet in full swing, join us Saturday, March 28th for the Grade 1 Florida Derby as the top three-year-old thoroughbreds compete for their chance to be legends. Feel the heart-pounding action up close with viewing from the rail or enjoy within the comfort of our trackside restaurants. Visit GulfstreamPark.com for more information. Gulfstream Park thrills at every turn.
Adena Springs bred, raced, and developed Awesome Again and Ghost Sapper into important stallions. Now comes Ghost Sapper's best son, Shaman Ghost, bred, raced, and backed by the strength of Adena. A Hall of Fame runner like his sire and grandsire, Shaman Ghost captured the classic Queen's Plate at 3 en route to his Sovereign Award Championship. At ages 4 and 5, Shaman Ghost made cross-country history as the only horse in the past 30 years to capture both the Woodward Stakes and Santa Anita Handicap.
Shaman Ghost! He has won the Woodward
word.
It's Shaman Ghost, an overwhelming force in the last 16th of a mile.
Shaman Ghost would go on to earn over $3.8 million with repeated success at the highest level. Additional graded wins include the Grade 2 Brooklyn Invitational, the Marine Stakes, and Pimlico Special, before defeating the likes of Keen Ice and California Chrome, went second to Arrogate in the inaugural $16 million Pegasus World Cup. Ghost Sapper's best son, Shaman Ghost, standing at Edina Springs, Kentucky. Look for his fantastic first yearlings at the sales in 2020.
Racing fans, live racing will be conducted this weekend at Santa Anita Park. However, in accordance with recent health dictates issued by the state of California, Santa Anita is temporarily closed to the public for both training and racing. While Santa Anita is closed to the public, wagering will be available both online and at most satellite wagering outlets. First post time on both Saturday and Sunday is at 1 p.m. Please visit santaanita.com for updates.
Hello, I'm Junior Alvarado, and I listen to HRRN.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Red Brand Fence.
Pacoma has a head in front, and Some Like It Hot Ground still there, but second. Signalman three lengths away in third. He's lost some ground to the top of the stretch. Market King is in fourth. Chess Chief is fifth, back toward the inside, coming toward the eighth pole. Pacoma has the lead up to two lengths now. Some Like It Hot Ground changes lanes to the outside second. Signalman is in third. Chess Chief is fourth. Win is fifth. Pacoma, the leader, past the 16th pole. He has the advantage out to five lengths. Back to Some Like It Hot Ground. Signalman, then win. It is Pacoma for Javier Castellano and trainer George Weaver.
The voice of Keeneland, Kurt Becker, with the call of the Bluegrass Stakes last year and Vekoma's victory. And one thing you heard in the background was crowd noise, as you have for almost every race that's been run, well, in quite some time. That won't be the case this year when the Bluegrass Stakes is run in early April. Keeneland's set to open April 2nd. They were one of several tracks this week to come out and say that they will race without fans, at least for the first couple of weeks. And joining me now is Keeneland President and CEO Bill Thomason to update us on what is a very fluid situation. Bill, first of all, good morning. Appreciate the time.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on. These are obviously interesting times we're in.
And I'm sure that you are monitoring the situation even as we speak. This is obviously something that was announced this week, that Keeneland will race without fans. Is there a chance we could see Keeneland make a move like all other sports and say, you know what, we're just going to hold off for a couple weeks and we'll resume in maybe mid-April?
Well, you know, as we all know, the racing circuit, just there's so many important things that happen now as we prepare for the Kentucky Derby and as we move through the rest of the racing season. Our balance here is to make sure that we got to keep our fans safe. We know that. We have been watching this ever since it happened. I had the question asked, you know, at one point, is there some tipping point or is there something, something that really caused some of the decisions to be made? And everybody remembers we're an international entity. From our sales, we sell to 38 different countries, so We have been watching this since things started happening in Asia. I mean, we saw what happened in Japan and Hong Kong, and how they went first with racing with no fans. And first, we started looking a month and a half ago and said, well, it seems extreme. And then the more it kind of came through, we've been planning for this eventuality. But we're going to take care of, we got to take care of our horses. We got to make sure the horses are also kept safe and kept on their training regimens, and that we keep all of the people who are taking care of those horses safe. We thought it's prudent for our horsemen. They count on these races. They count on us to have race days. They count on us to be able to have the races and pay the purses and make sure that our horses are taken care of, and we take care of our owners. And then, you know, we left an opening that if all these measures that are being taken around the country have an impact, we've got some time. The race meet's a month long for us, so our community's looking forward to it. And if there's an opportunity in those last 2 weeks to be able to make a decision and know that we can do it safely for our fans and continue to let people enjoy the spring meet in Kentucky. All we did was leave an opening there and a glimmer of hope that all these measures we're taking are going to work. So we'll see.
Bill, talk about the additional measures that Keeneland will put in place for those who are going to put the show on, since there will be racing, jockeys, trainers, owners, racing officials, outriders, members of the media that will be allowed to attend. What additional measures will Keeneland have in place for those folks?
Well, we all know what's going on right now with the sanitary measures you have to take and all the washing of hands and the social distancing. And fortunately for the care of the horses, we're going to be doing things for our grooms and the people who come in to care for them, making sure that we're providing facilities for them to be able to exercise good hygiene. And we're an outdoor sport, so the horses are outside. We know that animals are not at risk for as far as being spreaders of the virus. So all of these measures that you see, we're going to be doing. And then on race days, we're going to have minimal people of our guest services staff who are going to be there to make sure that we provide for the safety of the few participants that are going to be on our grounds. And on race days, they're going to be, let's just face it, we'll see how we get there, but we're going to vastly limit the number of people who are on our grounds and viewing the races, and the ones, the owners who are going to be allowed to be there, the trainers, the grooms, to make sure that we're providing a safe racing environment, our regulators. It's just we have a facility that we're going to provide accommodations for the people who need to be there, again, to conduct the events properly and proper regulatory authority. But then we're going to make sure that we take care of everybody who steps on our grounds. And that especially includes Mike, our jockey colony. You know, whenever they come for additional measures, we'll put in place just in for that jockey colony. And everybody has to know there's just not going to be many people around.
Yeah, because the jockeys certainly in close quarters with the jocks room there at every racetrack. And you know, Bill, at the top of the show, I drew the parallel to the PGA Tour because of the fact that that's a sport that is played outside. And they initially said, okay, we're going to do this without fans. And then they took the approach that we're just going to cancel all of our tournaments until we have this thing under control. And one of the comments that resonated with them was from number one golfer in the world, Rory McIlroy, when he said, more than anything, everyone needs to get tested. Meaning, if they're going to play, all the players, all the caddies, they all need to be tested. And I'm just curious if that also applies to horse racing and to the jockeys that you just mentioned.
The one thing that we've all seen, there's absolutely nothing that's going to be off the table for all of us.
Yeah.
And you said at the top of the show as well, this happens and things are changing by the moment.
Yep.
We're getting more resources allocated. We're getting more ability to test all around the country. I think nationally and from the state level, we've always taken it seriously. Our governor's done a really good job. We work very closely with our state officials and especially local officials, with our mayor. And what I feel good about is we're still a couple of weeks away. We've got more resources that are coming to us. We're learning more about what we can do every day to make sure that we keep people safe, everybody who's involved, so that we can do everything that we can to try to continue to take care of these horses and run these races in the right way and add stability to the industry, which we know that we need to do in a responsible manner. I can't even, with what's happened over the last week, I can't even imagine what's going to come in the next 2 weeks.
Yeah. Bill Thomason here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. And again, Keeneland opening April 2nd, they will race without fans at least until April 15th, we'll reassess. And as Bill just alluded to, that this is a developing fluid situation. And, you know, we'll probably never know if these measures are the reasons why the virus didn't spread. And that's not just in horse racing, but across the board in all sports. But I'm pretty certain we could say that because we're taking these measures, we can at least say we've done everything we can possibly do to keep this under control. And Keeneland, an industry leader at the forefront of that fight. And Bill, really appreciate you taking some time here to explain this to folks, and we'll look forward to the doors opening here in just a few weeks.
And we're excited about it as well. And we know that as people watch it, we've got our broadcast department, and you're going to be able to see some exciting horse racing on all the different places that we're going to be able to show it.
Yeah, excellent stuff. Bill Thomason here on HRN, like all of our guests who appear on the program, receives a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race, the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. You can wear what you love and embrace your passion at EmbraceTheRace.com. Bill, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me on.
All right, Bill Thomason. Going to get to a break. We'll come back and wrap this one up for you. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for the Kentucky Derby and Triple Crown.
Spendthrift Farm is at it again, now offering breeders our best incentives yet, including deep discounts on young stallions and proven stallions. And for the first time, 30 days paid boarding at the farm of your choice so that you can breed your mare to a stallion from the most diverse roster in North America without the burden of boarding costs. Serious deals on serious stallions, only at Spendthrift, the Breeders' Farm. Call today to learn more, 859-294-0030, or visit SpendthriftFarm.com.
Shadwell Farm, home to world-class stallions, presents two young stars. Mohaman, undefeated two-year-old, multiple graded stakes winner at 2 and 3. A dazzling son of Tappan, winner of his first 5 career starts, 4 in graded stakes. Grade 1 winner, Tamer Coos, winner of the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile. This son of Spitestown was a top international miler that earned over $1.8 million. Shadwell Farm, building speed for the future.
Bloom Racing. Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Pulling away from Come Dancing, Mopetism, and the others, Midnight Bizou leaves no doubt today. She won the Phipps in hand.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now, get in on the action at bloomracing.com.
When it comes to buying tractors, mowers, and farm equipment, look no further than locally owned Central Equipment on Red Mile Road in Lexington. A third-generation family business, Central Equipment has been servicing the equine industry for more than 46 years, working closely with the NTRA to ensure their equine clients get the best pricing on their new John Deere purchases. At Central Equipment, you'll find top brands like Exmark, Kubota, Still, John Deere, and Woods. Stop in today and experience the family-owned atmosphere or visit centralequipment.com.
Power.
Cara Conti has won.
Passion.
It's Cara Conti winning by a barren neck or so.
Performance.
Cara Conti and on door. Cara Conti.
Gainsway Stallion Cara Conti. A precocious Group 1 winner as a 2-year-old and a 3-time Grade 1 winner, including a scintillating win in the Breeders' Cup Mile in 1:32 and 4 fifths, recording a 1:14 buyer speed figure. Cara Conti possesses a strong Stormcat male line and hails from a top female family, which includes the hugely influential champion Miesque as his third dam. The only second crop sire with graded stakes winners on dirt and turf, Cara Conti's first crop of 3-year-olds includes Sol Volante, winner of the Grade 3 Sam F. Davis Stakes, and undefeated colt Kenzai Warrior, who is pointed to the Group 1 English 2000 Guineas. Value priced at just $10,000, Cara Conti gets the gold according to Chris McGrath's Value Podium in the TDN. He has the performance, the pedigree, and the physical. Come see Cara Conti at Gainesway.
I'm Manny Franco, and I listen to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Red Brand Fence.
You know, this is the time of year when many people start thinking about planting new grass seed and working in the fields and doing stuff in the paddocks and fertilizing. Well, if you're going to be doing any of that, and for all of your farm needs or for your home needs, if you're going to be working around the yard, go see the folks at Woodford Feed out in Versailles. Trust me, Bob Cleveland and the entire team just do a fantastic job. I have had the privilege of being associated with them for the past few years, and I get all of my farm stuff there, and they have everything. They have everything you could possibly want, and they'll hook you up, and they'll treat you right as well. It's Woodford Feed out in Versailles. You go in and tell them that the Baron sent you in there, and they'll take care of you. I promise you that. Don't forget, too, that in this week's edition of The Blood Horse, the March 14th edition. You can see the feature story on Country House's long journey from Kentucky Derby winner to Laminitis survivor by Lenny Shulman. Bill Oppenheim looks at promising second crop sires and so much more. Just download a copy of Bloodhorse Magazine and Tablet today from the App Store or Google Play or shop.bloodhorse.com, or you can sign up at subscribe.bloodhorse.com. Well, my thanks to all the guests who made this show possible. It's been a busy show. We covered a lot of ground, talked about so many pertinent topics. Josh Pons from Country Life Farm with our Stallion Spotlight segment. Hall of Fame trainer Steve Asmussen was with me in the first half of the show. Kip Elzer from Kirkwood Stables talking about the two-year-old sales. Mark Cassie in the second half of the program talking about what the sport can do in light of the indictments handed down by the FBI this week, and Bill Thomason, the president of Keeneland, just a short time ago, talking about COVID-19 and the preparations they are making in advance of their spring meet. If you missed any portion of the show, just head over to our website, horseracingradio.net. A podcast is available. Also, Horse Racing Radio Network on Apple Podcasts. The poll question today, is this sport, the sport of horse racing, capable of policing and regulating itself? So many of you took the time to vote. I appreciate that. 80% saying no, we are not. Certainly doesn't look like it at this point. We'll see if that changes. For my producer, Lee Delapina, here in our Lexington studios, for Sean C. Chauncey, handling our social media, I'm Mike Penna. Thanks for listening, and as always, go Steelers.